Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. City on a Hill, a new series on Showtime, portrays a crime-ridden Boston in the early 1990s before the Boston Miracle. The producers include Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, who we know grew up in the Boston they're portraying. So to join me today to talk about it are two people who were in the city when this was happening and are prepared to reflect on it. Former Boston Chief Police Dan Linsky, he's now a managing director in Kroll's Security Risk Management Practice and heads the firm's Boston office. Chief, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and still a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Michael, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Okay, I'm going to start by playing a scene so our listeners can really sort of connect with this show. It introduces one of the major characters, Kevin Bacon, and he plays Jackie Rohr, kind of a morally compromised FBI agent. He's racist, he's foul-mouthed, he's crooked, and he's talking about missing what he considers a simpler time for the city.
What used to make this city great was that it was run by bad men who understood that they were bad. And then some stupid goes on the TV and tells everybody, you can't act like this anymore. Not even in a Bruins game.
So what you're saying is you're upset because this is a civil place to live now.
So, Dan, this show, that scene, is 1992. That's where it starts. What was Boston like then, and how civil would you say it was?
Well, Boston was going through a time of increased violence. We had the armored car gangs in Charlestown. Whitey Bulger's crew was selling drugs in South Boston. We had street gangs in Roxbury and Dorchester who, with the dawn of the crack epidemic, were engaged in sometimes daily gun battles back and forth over turf. And it was a tough and violent time going on in the city of Boston, for sure.
So definitely not civil.
Not civil. No, not civil.
Okay, Michael, this is showcasing this interesting in-between time that we haven't seen reflected on stage and screen as much. We normally sort of get the Whitey Bulger era. This is a little different. And it begins with a description of the Charles Stewart case, which was when a white man murdered his pregnant wife, but then actually told police that an African-American had committed the crime. The police had an African-American in custody, but 2 months later, his brother revealed that Stewart himself had committed the murder. What do you remember about that time, and what did this pilot bring back for you from that time and watching it?
Yeah, it's interesting. So one, credit to Ben Affleck and Matt Damon for bringing local stories to this conversation. I think there is a, I always call it truth catching up to history. There's a need to have conversation around criminal justice, around crime, and it's good to get a Boston perspective in that. So I think interesting Stewart murder case is Detective Linsky at the time was in the middle of this, and I was coming out of college and in the community. I'm from Roxbury, from the housing projects right nearby, Lenox Street housing projects. It's interesting because there was a tension in the city around race that existed before the Stewart murder case that, quite frankly, people were ignoring. And like we see play out in Stewart and in Ferguson or Chicago, the underpinnings were here too. So the Stewart murder case just sort of lit the match. It was the police officers really going out based on the description of Charles Stewart in arresting and in stopping African-American men. And many of us who grew up in Roxbury were used to being stopped. You know, I was a kid who didn't do crime, didn't do drugs, but had been stopped frequently. So I think the tension was high. And then it became a story post the Charles Stewart case of what went wrong. What was wrong about our policing in the city? What was wrong about our police community relations? And it inspired a lot of conversations at that. And I'm not quite sure we've overcome that.
You know, I moved to Boston in 1994, and I remember it feeling like the Charles Stewart case had just happened. It was still looming so large over the city. I was surprised when I found out it was 5 years before. It was still so current. Okay, so Dan, the second big character in City on a Hill is the assistant district attorney, DeCourcy Ward. He's played by an actor named Aldous Hodge. He's an outsider, but he teams up with Kevin Bacon's Rohr character to take down a family of armored car robbers, you know, to Michael's point, in Charlestown. Here's Ward in the show.
A couple of days ago, a crew knocked over an armored car in Revere. The guards still missing.
You're friends with the federal prosecutor. What the f*** do you need me for?
I don't want this investigation taken from me. I want to run it.
And I don't want to just bury who did it, no. I want to go into Charlestown and I want to f*** that place up.
Dan, what is that foreshadowing? And do you think their picture of how crime, well, I think you do think the picture of how crime ridden the city was accurate, but that kind of hunger to get after it, was that accurate?
Sure, there was definitely a hunger to get after it. There, you know, and the show shows, you know, some people who were doing the wrong thing, wrong attitudes. At the same time, there were a lot of great cops, a lot of great agents, a lot of great prosecutors who were just trying to do the right thing and to get people who were engaged in violence and to stop it. I mean, it's a takeoff on the unfortunate murders of the guards up in Salem, New Hampshire. At that point, Charlestown had a code of silence. And you know, the DA, I believe my opinion is it's Ralph Martin, who was the DA, not the assistant district attorney.
Yeah.
And he came in and he, you know, initially there was some tension because he had put some cases against police officers, and police officers obviously, you know, want to be protected themselves. But at the same time, he started the process of working together along with, you know, then Commissioner Evans, where they started having conversations about similar goals. And that case winds up, the federal prosecutors use a grand jury process. They start going after everyone over there and they break the code of silence. And the individuals responsible for the murders, the individuals responsible for the organized crime work over there were taken off the streets and grabbed. And in the same process, you know, Jackie Ward, to me, I believe is probably based on you know, John Connolly's character.
In Party Wise, yeah.
Probably the better portrayal of John Connolly's character, where there's actually some noble intent to it, where I don't think the real-life Connolly had that. That process gets taken over. So, you know, it took a while. But from – and Michael and I were talking about this earlier. It's important for the city and every young police officer who just graduated the academy yesterday should be watching this show and knowing the history of what's impacted the police than they have today. As a young cop, I would be in Roxbury, and all I wanted to do was get drugs and guns off the street and keep people safe.
Okay.
And people would say, you know, you, the police are part of the Irish mafia. And I'd say, you're crazy. And then I go back and reflect on what was going on, and I say, you know what? There was some truth to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, I want to come back to what you said, Dan. One of the creators, Chuck McLean, did actually say that the DeCourcy Ward is based on Ralph Martin, who was the first African-American Suffolk County DA and
Absolutely.
A Republican.
Yep.
In the show, he's fresh off a stint working for federal prosecutors, and he was a major voice in pushing for jail time for police. Now he's working with the police as a DA, and he is not given the warmest welcome.
Right.
Let's hear that real quick.
You might want to be polite. Ask me to at least sit down, considering I'm the one prosecuting your colleague.
When you worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office, you wanted to give cops jail time. I'm going to catch a shot a pregnant woman. You can stand, my friend.
So, Michael, in that full scene, there's partly hostility, what feels like hostility from the police officer for that.
Right.
But also partly what feels like hostility from the police officer because he's black.
Absolutely.
So do you think that the way he's treated by the police in the show and in that scene is accurate? What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny, and I'm hopeful that this film leads to more conversation with Ralph Martin and what he experienced, what he saw, and for him to tell his story and for others to share their story. Of course there was rampant racism within law enforcement in our criminal justice system. People carry that from their personal lives, their views towards other people, into their jobs, the decisions you make, who to prosecute, who to let go, what charges to bring. That all plays into this work, and many attorneys know that that's the taint of our system. I think the film brings that out. The DA in that case had a challenge. He was dealing with politics. He was dealing with the blue code of silence. He was dealing with, quite frankly, the corrosion within policing that says, hey, my cousin, who I'm a cop, and my cousin's involved in this, and I need to make this go away. So those relationships are real, and whether it was the Irish relationships with police officers, and I don't know if this is the case, and Linsky would know this better than I, more the Italian relationships within the fire department. This city was very tribal in that sense, and it created problems for African Americans who had been here for a long time, but were the victims of the racist institutions in this city as well.
Now, Dan, we want wanted to take a different look at this program. We didn't want to do it as a sort of TV critic, but instead as Boston people, it was seeing a Boston story told. That being said, one of the things that critics talk about is that it's striking, and this is to Michael's point, all the different relationships that are really well depicted and how they come into play in this first episode. You know, FBI, police, local residents of particular neighborhoods, working class families. The complexity of these relationships and how they push the decisions of people who maybe wear one official hat and then maybe an ethnic hat and maybe a neighborhood hat and maybe a gender hat. Did you find that to be realistic? And is it that complicated navigating that world in law enforcement?
Sure. Law enforcement in Boston is made up of people from the neighborhoods, right? So issues with race and racism, we have it in our community. You know, so there's people in all our communities that have issues with race, and it's a reality. Some is unconscious bias. Some is conscious bias. But we then employ people for police, fire, EMS, politics, district attorneys, banks, colleges, universities. So those same thoughts and ideas and challenges come to that. So people were traditionally neighborhood based in Boston. You know, I remember being a Latin school kid, going out of Hyde Park to Latin school for the first time was like, you know, traveling a far off distant land. But when I got there, I found out that kids from Jamaica Plain, Charlestown, all of us had the same goal to keep our parents happy and try and get out of the school in 6 years. And I think while it was a problem, I think we also saw that the race relations got better, that issues got addressed, that conversations got happened, and people united together to try and figure out a common way to do it. It was very disparate, and we were occupying neighborhoods. We weren't policing them. We weren't engaged in the community with how they wanted to be policed. and depending on it depends on which side of the chair you're sitting on. You know, my version of the effects of the racism in the BPD is different than obviously Michael and some of the folks that, you know, he grew up with and seeing it from their seat. But we have to understand each other's perspective on that and figure out what the solution is going forward.
I want to come to Michael on this, but before I do, quickly, there's a little bit of cringeworthy sound that I want to play because I think it supports some of what you were just saying, Dan. This is a snippet of a scene when the police are about to forcibly enter a home in Bromley Heath public housing. I want to listen to the setup of the entrance between the officers. Now, at the end of this scene, an officer gets shot. I think that's kind of important context.
I'm only going to say this once. This is a racially charged situation. It's very delicate. Restraint is the spirit of the law. Let's go.
So you would expect someone to say this is a racially charged situation and have them then act like it's racially charged,
right,
instead of laughing. And Dan said earlier that there's pieces of this show that should be training videos, yep, for people in law enforcement and in public engagement today. Were scenes like that hard for you to watch, Michael? And kind of where did you go in your head?
So I think it depends on who you are. I think that as we sort of start to see these scenes and really some live reality shows play out with some police-involved shootings, I think some people cringe. I think for me, as more of a conscious person who's been working in this space, it's a validation. It's an awakening, right? Where more of us are woke now to have a conversation around how people violated the rights and may have taken lives of people. I think, you know, I knew growing up some amazing police officers, great people, did great things, but I also knew bad cops. And they're depicted in this movie, in this show. And I'm excited that we're now having a nuanced conversation about law enforcement. I work quite closely with the Boston FBI. Based on all the corruption in the Boston FBI, they invited many of us in when I was president of NAACP to be part of their Citizens Academy.
This was corruption at the time.
Exactly. And as depicted in the film, to show us a new face of the FBI. They're acknowledging that the old FBI had that corruption, and they were involved with Whitey Bulger and many others in the crime in our city. I think this is an exciting time if we want to tell the truth.
So one of the things that's really striking to me in listening to the two of you talk about this first episode is some sense of that this is appropriate, important, and helpful. And as I was watching the first episode, I was thinking about how much we've changed since the time that this show is talking about. Is it helpful and healthy for the city of Boston to have this story about its history told now, Dan, and what can we learn from it?
Absolutely. So we're facing some similar challenges today, right? Violence is occurring. We've got to figure out a way around that. The police are going to be forefront with that. They can't do it alone. And we've got to engage everyone in the process to be part of that. understanding the history as to why we have – so I remember a case where a young child was shot in a park, and I got there. I was on vacation. I actually came to it, run out in the park. There's 300 people who saw it. They wouldn't tell my cops, who ran towards the bullets and saved that child's life along with their EMTs. They wouldn't tell the cops who did it or why. And the cops, you know, have – geez, I'm here to help you. Why wouldn't you cooperate when someone's shooting a child in a park? Some of that is because we've alienated the particular people and they don't want to work with us. Some is there's real fear of retaliation if you live in those neighborhoods. And if you're a police officer who doesn't understand the history and the real fear that some of our community members feel, then you will get frustrated with the lack of cooperation, and you can then start going, I'm going to go to work, I'm going to do my job, and it becomes us versus them. Us versus them, everyone loses. We need to understand where we came from, what we did to get to where we are today. And I think we're a lot better off than we were 32 years ago when I first started with the Boston Police Department. But where can we go tomorrow, and how do we get there? And I think understanding our history is huge. Obviously, we have a different version of it than everyone has a seat, and everyone tells it from their seat.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, just in the last 30 seconds or so, I saw you nodding so much. I'm not even going to ask you a question.
So
I'm just going to turn to you.
Yeah, so I think one is the film reminds me, when we talk about black communities, they say, why won't they snitch? And I watched the film, and I said, cops didn't snitch. Charlestown didn't snitch. South Boston didn't snitch. So why are they expecting black folks to risk their lives to snitch? It's just culture. It's the crime that infests our neighborhood. The other thing I just say is The Wire is a similar show. It's exciting that we'll have a nuanced view from various different perspectives to that Boston from those late 80s, early 90s.
And you see this as a really nuanced
Absolutely.
View. And you do too, Dan.
I do.
Yeah. Oh, great. That's great. All right. So we've just heard from Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Thanks for being here
today.
Also, former Boston Police Superintendent in Chief Daniel Linsky. He's now a managing director in Kroll's Security Risk Management Practice and heads the firm's Boston office. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, and Paris Alston. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.